I'm saying.
I don't think it's the same thing, because I think that obviously with Trump, it's a different electoral process. So anybody can put their hand up and run. And so nobody could foresee that happening. And yeah, obviously these political insiders get it wrong sometimes, but more often than not, they're right. Because they're Nostradamus. They look, basically what I'm saying is people in Canberra have psychic powers as a reason they rule us.
And if you notice, they're all Scorpios.
And Taurus. Yep. I mean, Scott Morrison and Bill Shorten. Ooh, when bulls fight in a yard, am I right? They both are Taurus.
Well, and in fact, Scott Morrison was born on the 13th of May, which I think was a Friday. He was born on Friday the 13th.
No.
Yeah, I Google that shit, Jamie. Yuck. Can we hire some Jamie, and can I not be the Jamie, please? Yes.
If your name is Jamie, and you would like to sit in the corner with your back turned, you're not allowed to look at us. You have to sit there and think about what the choices that you've done with your life, that you're willing to sit in the corner while three grown men have fun, and you're probably another grown man, and you're excluded.
Unless you're an absolute dumbass, then you could be our Carl Pilkington.
Yeah, that's the only stipulation. Pretty much, if you're too dumb to operate the computer, then join the party.
Then join the party. What are you doing in front of a computer? You need to be on radio then.
But yeah, we need you as a Jamie. Yeah, what were we talking about?
Now, what I want to know is, okay, Jordan, you explain this to me, and I'm the layman here. Okay, come on, really. How is Scott Morrison different from Malcolm? Will there be any policy change? Has he been an advocate of something that like Malcolm was like resisting?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, Malcolm Turnbull tried to sneak in some renewable policy changes to the National Energy Guarantee.
But
as soon as he gave it up, right? But the point is, he tried. This is the problem. Like, you know, Malcolm Turnbull understands that Labor's policies are clearly better. And he thinks, well, what if I just put in a shit one, then that'll be just as good in the long run when I'm not Prime Minister. But I want to be Prime Minister for as long as possible. So it's just this narcissistic exercise for him to be Prime Minister.
What was his end plan? Did he think that by his, like, excellent, what he would call compromising ability and what I would call a complete lack of backbone was that he would want to be the Prime Minister for, like, what, the next 12 years?
No, I think that in his mind he didn't even care after. Look, he looked so satisfied bowing out of politics because he'd done what he wanted, which is to get his face immortalised on that wall in Canberra. So everyone who ever walks to Canberra for the rest of however long Australia is a civilization has to look at his face while the tour guides go along and go like, and then there's another one. That's it.
That's all he wanted. God.
And so he got that. That's why I hate Malcolm Turnbull infinitely more than Tony Abbott and Peter Dutton.
Mm.
Because no, that's Peter... You cannot say that Peter Dutton and Tony Abbott are completely self-motivated.
No, they're extremely principled men. Their principles are fucking horrible, but that's a different story altogether. They're principled men. You know what? Okay, so I can look at Peter Dutton and I can say, okay, he's the villain of the story. Malcolm is that friend that will stab you in the back at the end.
And he's the black guy from Star Wars.
Fuck that guy.
Yeah, fuck him.
Yeah. And so even though Peter Dutton
frees Han Solo,
yeah, Peter, and what was this insurgency about? That Malcolm, you weren't as forceful in sending the boats back, like.
Yeah, that's what, it. But that's what they're talking about. Look, it's just about the optics of it and which seats they're going to try and save. That was it. And it's the whole insurgency is just purely about an image that they're going to present in the next election, so that they can save the next ones, because it sets them up in the future for the direction of the party.
But the plans are ruined. Scott Morrison is the Prime Minister, not Peter
Dutton. No, but that was the main... That's what the Liberal Party machinery wants. I think you're right on this as well. I think what the Murdoch press wants is Peter Dutton, because they think that, first of all, it like aligns with their values more. It aligns with their readers' values more. It that's something that they can work with, and they're probably right that they would be able to win more seats with that. But the Liberal Party machinery doesn't want that face projected. They want the more moderate face projected. Why? Because most of them, the Liberal Party machinery, are a little more quote-unquote moderate than the conservative wing of it. That's the reason why. Because it's more appealing to a cross-reference of the... It's that same thing of like, look, you know how no one's favorite food is McDonald's?
Except for mine. But
everyone's just... Huh?
Except for mine.
Yeah, I can actually imagine that.
Big Mac.
Makes a lot of sense to me. And I bet you, I could see you every Saturday being like, whoa, what a big Saturday. I'm going to get a happy meal. We just played Mousetrap, yeah. And you were all for it.
Yeah, I was crying when they discontinued the Mega Mac.
yeah, but like okay. So there's that food, and everyone looks at it and then says, yeah. Well, it's here, it's open, and they go to that. But then some people really like Guzman and Gomez.
Mm.
That's the conservative side. And they're saying, and I think that's what the Murdoch press has understood by looking at world election events, is that it's better to have people that are really enthusiastic about a candidate because they'll volunteer for that candidate. They'll push for that candidate online. They'll start working as mini campaigners to push that guy across, as opposed to someone that everyone just goes, he's all right. That's what you want.
Okay.
But the Liberal Party machinery is a little more... They don't understand emotions because they're just such boring, removed, grey-haired bureaucrats that they'll sit there and they'll just look at the numbers and go, well, you know, Malcolm Turnbull's approval rating is a little bit higher, so we'll go with that one. You know?
Okay, here's the thing. All of the Liberal politicians listening to this podcast, particularly you, the moderate ones, I have a piece of advice for you, and I'm talking straight right at you. Listen. God,
you'd have to be such a masochist to listen to this and support the Liberal Party.
Yeah, I am a piece of shit, aren't I?
I bet you Chris Pine actually does listen to this and beats off.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I'm scum.
No, but okay. If you're a loyal pod listener, you will attest to this. About a year ago, way before the Trump elections, I always used to say this one thing, that if you're a moderate in today's political world, you will soon lose your ground.
Yes.
The politics is moving either towards the left or towards the right. And before you know it, the very floor that you are standing on will cease to be, and you will be sucked into the core. Right? So now that time has come. The moderates are now irrelevant in a way. What you need to do is one of these two things. Either you leave politics and go back to like doing whatever the hell you were doing, like property development, being a real estate agent.
That is the entire Liberal Party, isn't it? People that used to work in the corporate sector are the people that are on the front bench. Pretty much, if you were intelligent enough and soulless enough to defend corporations against people that got asbestos poisoning as a result of your building malpractices, you're on the front bench of the Liberal Party. Mm. You're on the back bench if you worked for Ray White.
So all of you guys, you either need to like move towards the right of your own party.
Mm.
And if you think that that's too much for you, then leave politics.
And on top of that, what is your moral objection to that of, I'm perfectly happy to fund schools and hospitals by $80 billion to give a company tax cut of $50 billion, specifically mostly aimed at our campaign donors. That seems fine. I've got no moral objection to that. Mm. Climate change? What climate change? Am I right? We don't even know if it's man-made.
Yeah.
But seriously, gay marriage affects everyday people.
Mm.
Fuck you. Just fucking go on the conservative side. It's so much more boss anyway to just sit there and be like, nope, fuck everyone in even the smallest way. I can respect that so much more than people that are like, I can kind of convince myself I'm a good person. Because I understand that multiculturalism is nice because it gives us all the cuisines of the world.
Is that their biggest negative opinion?
Basically, well, that's anyone who's a moderate in the Liberal Party is pretty much just a North Shore mum.
Yeah, and well, okay. And these moderates, I honestly feel this. Okay, maybe I'm wrong. You are literally holding your party's, the people that support your party, the voters, hostage. When you use your own strength, you think that you're being a principled person when you vote for Scott Morrison over Peter Dutton. But I honestly think that the people that are truly voting for your party mostly want Peter Dutton to be the Prime Minister at this point. So you're kind of like, you know, all the John McCains of the world and rest in peace. You guys, just let it go. Either move to the left side or the right side. And if you think that you're a moderate like Malcolm, then just leave politics like he just did. Because this is the fate that you meet. You get discredited. You lose all... Malcolm,
you're in the wrong party for moderation anyway. That's the Labour Party.
Exactly. At this point, the Labour Party is the moderate party, and the Liberal Party is just
it's just a ragtag of Looney Tunes.
Yeah, it's quite
insane.
That's
where it should be. That's why Cory Bernardi left, because he was disgusted that Peter Dutton wasn't the Prime Minister then. He saw the trend. Because he jumped shit from you rats.
The only thing that I really ask from politicians is not a particular, believe it or not, not a particular point of view, but a principled point of view. And if you continue to do this, all you're going to do is eventually lose all your principles, because the power that you get from your electorate is demanding you to behave in a certain way that is contrary to your own political views. What is the point of staying in politics then? Just move away. You're gonna
let's just stop using the word moderate for someone who's a moderate in the Liberal Party, because it's gross and inept anyway. They're not a moderate party. They're really, if you look at the views that they hold, about 30% of the population agrees with them. That's pretty fringe. If only 3 out of 10 people agree with you, when the Labour Party. When if you look at polling on policy by policy issues, 7 out of 10 people agree with the Labour Party. You're not a moderate.
At least on issues, they do.
On issues, right?
Yeah.
And so you're not a moderate. And you know what you are is a careerist. In the Liberal Party, there is careerists, and then there's just Catholics. That's pretty much it. Join the Catholics or get out and just go into the corporate sector. You make more money anyway.
Yeah. And what was that? What was that? That video that you were showing me today, which was like a little snippet of the Institute of Public Policy or something.
You have to look that up. Everyone says that meme of someone putting Peter Dutton's face over a scene in the new Star Wars movie sums this up so well. No, the IPA. Go look up the IPA's Facebook page. It's about a minute and 30 seconds long. It took me a minute and 20 seconds to realize they were serious. It is the most hilarious piece of satire I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's basically telling Scott Morrison to basically be Peter Dutton.
It's not even saying that.
Isn't it saying just like, yeah, you need to like with the penalty rate cuts?
It's basically what it's saying is, which no secret that the Liberal Party has lost its way, and it makes total sense why everybody in the electorate hates you at the moment. And it's because all the unpopular policies that you've put forward in the last 6 years didn't go far enough. Go way further than that. You really need to reform IR to the point that you can employ all 700,000 people that don't have a job, which basically means get rid of all the penalty rates.
All the regulations that keep worker rights.
Minimum wage, get rid of all of that.
And you know, like, and they're talking about like industrial sector. Industrial sector is probably the only sector where worker rights are still intact to some degree, because their union is still strong.
Yeah.
Compared to like they want everyone to be like retail workers. Mm. And you know what? That is precisely why The Liberal Party is losing the next elections. I mean, just look at like a fucked up state like Longman, which is so powerful and is supposed to be the ideal place for, you know, your Peter Duttons to win the elections by saying, you know, the global elite and the elites are not looking after you. Where Malcolm Turnbull, remember that fight that he had with this woman over penalty rates?
Yeah, that's right.
She was literally trying to say that my granddaughter can pay her rent because of these penalty rates. Do not cut these. Mm. And that would tells you that on an issue-by-issue basis, the vast majority of Australians agree with Labour. It's only the propaganda that somehow Labour is for elite and Liberals are for the working man, even though the name Labour is for Labour and Liberal means...
Yeah, but it's not spelt with a U. How un-Australian's that? They really are trying to turn us into America, aren't they? That's their agenda.
Anyway, so the bottom line, I think, is that nothing has changed except for this whole fucking... This has been like a... It's just bad for the Liberal Party. Like, I kind of feel bad for them now. Because not only will they lose the next elections now, they will have a weak opposition until...
And they're a soulless party.
Unless somehow Scott Morrison magically becomes a formidable force in politics, which... I don't know. Either he's been, like, hiding it way too long, or he just doesn't have it. I think he doesn't have it. And so he'll be a shit opposition leader compared... They should just get Tony back.
Should have.
Tony should be the opposition leader all the time. As soon as they win the election, someone else becomes a prime minister. But when they go back into opposition, Tony Abbott should be the bulldog trying to kill everyone.
Just make carbon freezing out of science fiction and just put it into science so that you can freeze him as soon as he's in opposition. And then as soon as they're about to win the election, unfreeze him.
Yeah.
Just preserve him as long as possible.
But I think, you know what?
And if the carbon freezing isn't made at that point, just put him in some pickle brine.
And also, I don't know if this is true, Jordan. You were telling me this, but I think this is an extremely important thing that Australian politics, and it should be a bipartisan thing, where a leadership spill can only happen after election results.
Well, that's what the Labour Party is.
And not by election results, general election results. Because this is getting...
What do you mean general election
results? What I mean is, like, you know, the general elections where, like, the whole country votes. That's after the results have come out.
Yeah, right.
That's when you're allowed a leadership spill.
Okay, sorry, I thought that you meant that it's just... you look at the polls, and whoever's leading in the polls, you put them as the head of the party. I actually agree with Paul Keating on this. The cabinet should decide who's the leader. You know how there's this big push that you've got to allow the people in... The general public to pick who the leader is.
No, not the general public, but you let the the members of the Liberal Party decide who the leader is going to be. And I don't agree with just the cabinet because that consolidates power into like a very few hands.
But you know, this is the double standard of it. You know the reason why the Liberal Party has not instituted that rule but the Labour Party has? Because the Labour Party has realised that if they change leader, they get punished for it in the media. And it works worse for them when they do it. Because it just creates all this backlash of, oh, they can't run themselves, how they're supposed to run a country. But when the Liberal Party changes leadership, all the media coverage is, a new direction for the nation. Oh, get to know Scott Morrison.
I don't think that's the media reaction this time.
That was the media reaction for sure.
No, that has mostly been the media. Well, oh,
that is
well,
not
ABC,
the media reaction.
ABC's
that...
article today was, look at these young people, and even after this fiasco, they haven't been disillusioned by politics yet.
Yeah, exactly. That's not negative.
No, it's not negative because obviously
that's extremely positive.
Well, they want to keep hope. But what I'm saying is, like, man.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying.
I don't think any Australian is happy about these fucking musical chairs.
The point is that the media used that stupid point, which is we've said 1,000 times. It doesn't matter who leads a party, or it does matter, but like to a negligible degree.
Mm-hmm.
It's so minor that it's not even worth talking about who the leader of any party is. But the media creates this environment when the Labour Party does it, that means that they're ungovernable, that they're this total shambles mess, train wreck of a party that has no direction or vision for the future, and it's just all this, all they care about is themselves and infighting. You need to get rid of them because it's just like having a bunch of mad men at the helm, you know? But when the Liberal Party does it, it's just a bit of, oh, savage infighting. Well, now that that's over, I guess it's just back to business as usual.
Mm.
That is the message that they're sending across to the public. It's not about whether or not the public is like, I'm sick of the leaders being changed. When the Labour Party is in, they inflame that hatred. And when the Liberal Party is in, they try and quash that hatred.
Yeah, well, man, the conservative media is going to try to do that.
Well, it's not even the conservative media. The ABC does it as well with that smug... Anyway,
but as if the media is able to... I honestly don't think any person in Australia, any citizen of Australia, is being fooled by the media. Everyone's kind of like, what the hell is happening?
You know, they're getting fooled by
the media. In the last, 10 years, this is the sixth time this has happened.
Yeah.
I think I'm right about that. That is ridiculous.
No, seventh, actually.
And, okay, either way, Labour or Liberal, this is absolutely ridiculous.
Why?
Now.
I don't even understand why it's a big deal. I don't care if they changed it every week. Maybe if they just played a game of musical chairs with their seats in Parliament and that was question time, I'd watch it even more and I'd be happy about it. It's entertaining. I don't see it as a problem. What is the actual bad negative effect on anything
when this happens? Well, the net loser is Australia. I mean, no, because every person, irrespective. Okay, so for example, Scott Morrison is probably one of the biggest loyalists of Malcolm Turnbull, right? He, even though he and Malcolm Turnbull probably looked eye to eye on almost every issue, they both have a different approach to how governance is supposed to be had. So Malcolm probably had like targets in his mind. Actually, you know what? No, Malcolm never had any targets. His target was stay prime minister. But you know, whoever the prime minister is, they formed their cabinet and then they've got a vision of what they want to achieve. And, you know, in our democracy, we're not like China where the vision is for the next 30 years. It's usually for the next 3 years.
Mm.
And so that vision, and there's a whole bunch of public, like bureaucracy, that is trying to get behind the prime minister to make this vision happen. For better or for worse, it might be something that we personally wouldn't like at all. But that's the vision that the country has basically elected this particular person and this team to carry forward. Once you change that prime minister, the direction can change again. It disillusions the bureaucrats that are trying to achieve that. They might be getting different instructions now, and it's you lose motivation. I mean, whatever it might be, you've elected, like, for example, Trump, right?
I do agree with that to a degree, but I think that that's probably 10% of... probably even less than 10%. It should be such a small amount of how the political system actually works. Really, there is a machinery behind the Liberal Party, and they control the direction of Liberal Party policy, and then they're the ones that can say... that there would definitely be people like the General Secretary of the party, the President of the party, that whoever the Prime Minister is, they'd say, I've got this idea, and they'd say, that's not happening, because these donors say no. And then they'd say, okay, and then they'd move on.
Yeah.
Now, they'd be able to... there'd be some wiggle room and fighting within this cabinet. But essentially, their job is to carry out what is an already predetermined objective by these parties' machinations. It's the same with the Labour Party. How everyone's always just going like, oh, it makes so much difference if it's Julia Gillard or Rudd. Yeah, it does because of factions and things, but essentially their agenda is what the unions tell them to a large degree.
Having said that, it would be way better if it wasn't Bill Shorten. And who's that Kevin Rudd's friend?
Albanese.
Yeah, Albanese was the Prime Minister.
Definitely. And it would have won way more seats. There's no argument about that. But again, this is the whole point. Like, it shouldn't matter. It shouldn't matter if this empty bottle was the head of the Labour Party.
Okay, it
you
shouldn't.
You still vote for that empty bottle.
I understand that, and it shouldn't. The only way I would 100% agree with you was if all of the politicians were androids. What I'm trying to say is here, let's say you join politics tomorrow, what would be your dream? I mean, obviously your dream would be for, like, you know, help the people. But other than that, you would want to be the Prime Minister. any ambitious person wants to be the prime minister. And what that means is that everyone in that entire parliament is in the back of the mind thinking that I want that top job.
Yeah.
And when you create these uncertainties, that's when infighting starts. So, for example, like even in China, right? The way they wanted to keep the communist system as stable, what they do is about 5 years before the next president of the Communist Party, the person who is already there will nominate who will be the next, who will be the successor.
Oh, right.
Which is basically, and the sole purpose of that is, well, they say it's to, like, you know, prepare the person. But what it is it's to avoid any infighting, any struggle for the top position, because that will eventually hurt the policy. Yeah, exactly. And except for Xi Jinping, which is for a later time. He was the only one who hasn't nominated.
He
nominated himself, which is why the rumors are that he would want to stay there for a very long time. Anyways, same thing. That's why, like, okay, so for example, Julie Bishop and Scott Morrison were both loyalists. When this shit happens, all of a sudden, Julie Bishop's like, you know what? I want to be the prime minister now. And now you've lost a foreign minister. So all the contacts that she had with world leaders are now gone. This new person who will come in will probably have to be briefed all over again. And the elections are next year, as if they're going to do... Basically, all of your policy work has been paused until the next elections.
Okay, I do actually agree with that. No, you've convinced me. It actually does make... Because I was really of the opinion that it mattered maybe a fraction of a percent who was the prime minister. And I obviously understand that they all have their own flavors of leadership. And when it comes to day-to-day meetings with people, you know, like obviously when you change manager at a company, it'll go like slightly more productive or slightly less productive depending on who that manager is. But in general, the company still makes paper. You know, that was my general view of it. But actually,
and strong institutions, that's what you... Okay, here's the thing. You would want to ideally achieve that so that your system is not based on cult of personalities. It's based on an institution and an organization. All I'm saying is that in practice, because institutions are run by humans, it's not that organized. You know, it's like it's literally not the Illuminati that is doing this shit, you know. Anyways...
But okay, yes, it would matter in the... What I'm saying is, it would matter in the implementation of policies and agendas that have been set out by people that are not really in cabinet.
Yeah.
Which is how effective that vision is implemented, how quickly and effectively it's implemented. That's what it would affect. But in terms of the real big changing... nation-altering issues.
Yeah, that doesn't change. That wouldn't happen. But the nation-changing issues most often don't change. In fact, I argue, as a commie that I am, labor or liberal, those things don't change anyways.
What?
The big nation... So, for example, in my opinion, what, like, a big nation-changing thing would be if all of a sudden Scott Morrison... Imagine if this happens. If Scott Morrison comes in and is like, you know what? Fuck the U.S. We're siding with China from now on. That's, like, a huge, you know, a path-altering thing. But even if the Labour Party comes in, that wouldn't change anyways.
It's the just relationship between China and the U.S. It definitely changes. Because there's a constant argument within... not just the bureaucracy of Canberra, but also between politicians of Canberra, of whether they should be moving towards China or sticking with America. Yeah. So, for instance...
No, actually, 1 second. Before you continue with this, that's not the debate. The debate that Kevin Rudd's faction represents is not that should we side with China or should we side with the US. They say that we should be somewhere in between, as in we should keep our ties with the Chinese government economically and we should keep our ties with the US politically. It's not that we'll side with China or we'll side with the US. They still want to side with the US. They just say, just make sure we don't antagonize China.
Keating's more ballsy than that.
Man, Keating can say whatever the fuck he wants now. And plus, I think he's like worked heaps in China now. So he has a favorable opinion of it.
Oh yeah, no, but look, the fact that he was prime minister really tied in our relations with Asia for the next 30 years, which is a huge reason why we've had 30 years of continual economic growth. It's because of his groundwork in opening up trade relations with our neighbors, which makes perfect sense. Then John Howard came in and he started distancing himself from those ties and basically put them on a slow motion. Like, Keating just like fast forwarded the movie towards the inevitable outcome, whereas John Howard was just like, stop and smell the roses. And so we lost a lot of groundwork that could have been made in the period that he was Prime Minister. Mm-hmm. So it does matter on those big issues as well, of which of those parties are in power.
I agree with the fact that I would much rather Paul Keating be the Prime Minister than John Howard. Yes, yes, that is a non-controversial statement.
So like on the big issues...
Yeah.
Whoever, like, the machinery behind these parties, it matters which of those machines is directing the nation. That's what I'm saying. But when it comes to individual people in that machine, yeah, some cogs are more important than others, but they're cogs of the machine.
Mm.
That's my
point. Yeah, no, I can agree with that. And on this somber note, I guess...
It's such a way that a Werner Herzog documentary finishes. Yeah. And as the machine grinds to a halt, does it matter if it's oiled or not? Tune in next week.
No. We've got one more segment because I'm thinking of breaking this podcast into two and putting it out as two separate ones. So, because I think that we won't be able to record another one. So we've got another segment, and this segment is on popular demand, because I've heard a lot of people, and I've received a lot of emails saying, "Babe, you know how you receive more yomas, ya cunt?"
Oh, yeah.
With me, it's...
You don't have to tell me that I receive that.
Yeah. With me, it's more Pakistan and Adib, ya cunt. So,
just people like the idea of fat ethnic people being dumb.
It's just it's characters. I never thought that Adib would be famous. And the fucked up thing is, I never even changed his name. At least you changed Yilmaz's name. This guy exists. Like, and his name is out there.
Raw.
Anyways,
you learned from you did not learn from my mistakes.
I did not.
You did the exact opposite of that. You made more mistakes.
So I managed to remember another Adib story, which is, be ready for this: the time we found out that Adib can't read. This is a true story. So as you know, that Adib is an extremely rich man and an extremely dumb man. So throughout...
He's billionaire Yilmaz. But on top of that, grew up in a third world country.
did Yilmaz, like, grow up in Australia? Like, was he an immigrant? Or was he born here?
No, his parents are immigrants.
Yeah, okay. So
and
he
was
born
just
here.
A benefactor of really rich Turkish people that owned four kebab shops.
Yeah. Well,
and used to always say, man, Turkey's so much better than Australia. This place is a shithole. What? Every single shot I've ever seen of Turkey is an old man holding a donkey.
So this is, I think, year 8 or year 9. So Adib was basically not very gifted academically. Let's just put it this way. He never showed his marks, but we knew that he always scored the bottom.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you know that?
Because, like, teachers would often make it obvious. But the only thing was, every year, when we would go into the next class, somehow Adib would also be there. He never failed a year. So we're like, whatever's happening. And he used to say that, oh, I managed to pass at the end. Anyways, this time, this is the day Adib gets exposed. So one of these tough teachers decides that, you know how, like, when you're reading, like, I don't know if you guys had this, we had, like, comprehension, where you would read, like, a passage. And you had to...
Levels 1 to 10, then liftoff, orbit, and touchdown.
Yeah, so when we were doing, like, some comprehension exercise, and the teacher would often make, like, you know, some of the students read it.
Okay.
Now...
Love where this is going.
So no teacher ever asked Adib. For one reason, they knew that nothing intelligent is going to come out of this mouth. Secondly, they were kind of afraid of Adib because his parents were too rich and too powerful.
Yep.
But this teacher did not care. So she asks Adib, okay, Adib, can you start reading from page 89? Adib responds, I, even though this was an English class, responds in Urdu saying, I don't do that. And you know what? And we weren't surprised because Adib actually never did that. Like, he genuinely doesn't do that.
So it's so good that that didn't arouse suspicion.
No, we were just thinking that, yeah, Adib, as if Adib's going to participate in anything academic. So, but this teacher's like adamant. She's saying like, no, Adib, you need to read this. Mm. Start from page 89. And Adib is like protesting. He is saying, I do not do this. You must be new.
It's just such a cartoonish. I didn't know that happened in anything but cartoons. Like, we're the power imbalance where a student can say to a teacher, know your place.
Oh, yes. And you know what? The power imbalance was real. Adib was way more powerful than that teacher. The teacher actually went to school, had to work hard, and probably lives in like a lower middle class shitty town that Adib regularly goes in to like slap people. Like, that was the power imbalance.
He's Homer Simpson. The teacher is Frank Grimes.
Yes. And so, but like the teacher's like sticking to her guns and is like, no, Adib, you have to read this.
Yeah.
And then Adib eventually gives in and then he starts to read it. And I think he had to read, like, let's say if the sentence was, and then he went to the local shop to get a candy. Adib says, he's quiet. And then he's like, Miss, I forgot my glasses.
And then, did he wear glasses?
No, he never wore glasses. The only thing that he had was a comb in his front pocket every time because he had long hair, and every time he got like a little nervous or he was bored, he would take it out and he would start combing his hair. As a kid in year 8, he was that particular about the way he looked. So anyways, eventually he just can't read. And that's when we figure out that Adib is illiterate. Adib cannot read. And that was a revelation because, you know, we all knew that Adib wasn't the smartest cookie. Actually, he's a smart man, but like...
Is he?
Well, you know,
you've
like,
never said anything that even hints towards that.
Actually, you know what? Okay, smart man is he's a very confident man. That's I guess
nowhere near the same thing.
Yeah, okay, he's not smart. He literally could not read. And then he admitted later on that the only thing he can write is his name.
He's a hillbilly.
He's a hillbilly.
He's a hillbilly that struck oil.
You know what? In hindsight, I think he might have been just autistic and no one diagnosed him.
Well, autistic people can read.
No. Sorry, not autistic. Dyslexic.
I mean, I think dyslexia is just when you read a sentence and a few words are mixed around. So you still are able to read the sentence.
No, he wasn't able to read the sentence.
And on top of that, usually people that have dyslexia are creative or have some talent. Isn't the closest thing that Adib has ever had to a talent is the fact that I'm pretty sure ever since he's been 8 years old, all he's drunk is Diet Coke.
He eats three things. He consumes three things.
Consumes so much better, like he's a plant.
So I don't know what he's up to now, but when we were growing up, Adib didn't have water. He had Coke. Not Diet Coke, Coke.
Oh, sorry, right, my mistake.
Yeah, he only had Coke.
And so glad that I'm not in Pakistan, because me mistaking that and going, Diet Coke, I drink Coke. I'd be whipped in public.
And he had one of those like coolers in his room that would have those massive Coke bottles that I thought was only available in mineral water. That was, and he would just go with his glass and he would put it under it and it would just like, it was basically like he had like a fountain, like a Hungry Jack's fountain Coke thing at his, in his room. And he would only consume that. And when you tell him that a human body needs water, he would tell you that Coke also contains water.
He is a genius.
He is a genius, and which is true. The other thing that he would eat is pizza, but only from Pizza Hut. And then the last thing he would...
He's the guys from Wayne's World.
And the last thing that he would consume is tandoori chicken.
He's got life right. Those are the three best food groups.
And I'm not kidding. These.
And how good is it that the bottom of his food pyramid, you know how at the bottom of it's always vegetables and fruit?
Yeah.
His bottom is just Coke. If it was an animation, it would just show Coke pouring into the top of the pyramid and drowning out the vegetables. Those smiley faces of the tomato going.
Okay. Now, wait, hold up. A deep illiterate story doesn't end here. Because So what happens now is that he gets exposed, right? That he's like he's illiterate. So the teacher is now thinking, what the hell is this guy doing here? Like, how is this guy illiterate and he's already in year 9? Like, who let him pop? He must have given some sort of exam, some sort of test, you know, to get all the way here. Anyways, what she does is she's a bit of a hard ass. What she does is, okay, Adib, we used to have, like, every monthly we'd have, like, class tests. So she'd be like, okay, I'm going to evaluate your class test very particularly now. And if I think that you are not up to the mark, we will have to take some action. Anyways, so what happens is, next class test, I don't know, like, everyone's, like, curious to see what the hell is going on, right? So I'm doing the test. I look back, and Adib is basically just chilling during the whole test. He's just, like, he isn't even writing anything. Everyone else is, like, going insane. They're writing shit, and he's just chilling. So now I'm thinking that maybe he's just gonna be like, yo, I don't do tests. But that's not what happened. At the end, they collected the exam, well, the tests, and including Adib's, and Adib hands in his booklet. And he gets, like, insanely good marks. It's, like, it's amazing how... And the teacher's fucking confused. Like, what the hell is going on here? Like, I literally saw him not write anything. So she obviously suspects that he didn't do this shit. And what Adib had done, actually. Anyway, so what she says is... Anyway, she takes Adib's test to the principal. Because Adib's already on the radar now. She takes the principal and says... This is not done by this boy. He did not write anything in class. I don't know how he knew the questions, but he didn't do this. Someone else did it for him. In fact, she was very right, because Adib's tuition teacher was a teacher from another class who basically was getting paid a lot by Adib's family to teach him. And so what he did was he stole the exam papers, wrote the entire test for him, and handed it to him before the exam even began, or the test even began. And Adib had it all along.
Does Pakistan exist, or is it just like a movie that stars Vince Vaughn going back to school?
Yeah, it's a movie that stars Vince Vaughn and Paul Rudd.
With 200 million extras.
So, anyway, so the principal asks Adib to come in and says that, did you write this test, Adib? And he says, yes, every word of it.
Boss.
So then...
Take that, Dean.
So then she says, okay, bring me all of your other books. And what she's doing is comparing the writing at this point. Mm. But Adib, I'll give him credit for this. What he did was he rewrote the entire test in his own writing. Well, so he could do like calligraphy. He could copy shit, right? So he wrote the entire test.
This system is, you're right, it is a lot smarter than just learning how to read. I love it how dumbasses go to a huge Herculean effort to remain dumb.
Yeah. So then what happens is the principal's like, okay, this seems to be the same writing, but Adib, this is what I want you to do. I want you to sit in my office in front of me, and I want you to rewrite the entire test. Adib, at this point, is still cocky as fuck and confident. He's like,
this is a Vince Vaughn movie.
He's like, yeah, of course, I can do it. Like, why are you making me do this? I need to study. I need, like, I've got the math lesson now, and you're hampering my studies by making me do this while I need to be studying, and soon we'll have the final exams, and who will be responsible for that? And the principal says, I will be responsible for that. I need you to rewrite this entire test in front of me right now. Anyways, Adib sits down. He's like, of course, easy. He sits down. He looks at his pen for 5 minutes, and he says, okay, I didn't write this. He gets busted. And then what happens is that now, like, it's obvious. Okay, so now the teacher's like, okay, here's what's going to happen to Deep. You are not fit for year 8 or year, whatever year it was. You're not fit for this. You'll have the final exams. If you fail, you will stay a grade behind. You will not progress to the next year. So Adib's like still confident as fuck for some reason. He's like, oh, what a stupid bitch. Anyways.
Yeah, he came up with one of the most ingenious cheating systems. If he only put that much rigor and effort into gaming the system as he did into, say, like, Vegas, he'd be less rich than what he is now. So.
Anyway, final exams come. Adib does his exams, and we find out that Adib has failed every subject. Now we're thinking, oh shit, Adib is gonna stay behind. After summer vacations, we go back to school. We're in the next grade, and guess who's in the next grade with us? Adib is right there. Because, and I don't know till this day if this is true, but I have no reason to doubt it. Adib says, oh yeah, they did try to fail me, but I got the president to call the principal. And he didn't mean the president of some association. He meant the president of the country to call the principal to say that you will not let this boy fail. And till then, he kept progressing.
Holy shit.
And that is the day we found out that you can be illiterate, but as long as you're rich and powerful, you will not have a bad life, and you will continue to progress. That was...
Oh, that's what school's for, learning lessons.
There you go. There you go, all the listeners. So I had to think about this one. Okay,
there's just one conclusion to that. God exists, and he really likes Adib. Adib makes him laugh. You know what else we've learned from this?
Yeah.
Everyone always comes up to me and goes, oh, the UMass at my school. Yeah, but so what? No, I think the real lesson from here is we all had an Adib in our school. He's the king of it. And it's because it's just like, you know how if you have $1 billion, if you're a nice person, that $1 billion just makes you nicer. But if you're a cunt, it just makes you a cunt to the power of a billion.
Yeah, here's a math lesson for you.
you're listening, Adib? Yeah, but don't you think that also, mate, if you a funny dumbass, but you a billionaire, you a funny dumbass to the power of a billion, man.
Damn right, like, mate.
That is way better than anything I've ever heard with UMass, just because he has the connections of one of the most powerful and scary countries on the planet as his whim.
Yes. Oh, God. So I think you know what
you have to utilize a man that has to deal with rebellions in his country and nuclear armaments. To take time out of his day. To stop him from repeating.
To call a school principal to tell them that this illiterate kid needs to be progressing to the next year or I will shut down your school. Well, Adib at this point is killing it in life.
No, that's the best part of this all. And you know what? I honestly didn't think he deserved it until that story.
All right. Well, there you go. That was the pod for this week, live from Adelaide. And when I mean live, I mean recorded a week ago.
Yeah. Thank you. And like we were live enough, and we'll be out of this shithole. And recording next week in the vibrant metropolis that is Lithgow. So we'll see you then with more laughs, adventures, and us talking about how we're secretly huge fans of Peter Dutton.
See ya.